It's showtime.
And a discussion with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And so here we are, a new week and a new month begins. It is the final month of a tired and worn out 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. It is the second day of December 2019. And, well, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. Yes, I am. It's the second day of December, and the second day of December and the first broadcast day of December 2019 falls on a Moran Monday. And, oh my God, don't we just have the morons? It's by God, it's a moron traffic jam, is what it is. Yes. And so we've got plenty to plow into and plow through this evening. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that we are hot on both streams, the HeadOn.live stream and the White Rose Society stream. Thank you very kindly. Of course, the live part only matters if you listen to this program live, as opposed to listening to one of the many and varied ways in which one can get the podcast. I'm not sure. Brother Deacon Asa has the Google machine recrawled the site so that the issues with iTunes are solved now. I don't know, but that's what the problem has been with iTunes of late. And we did some, there was some maintenance done on that Brother Deacon Asa did on the site. And, who knew it messed with iTunes. So hopefully that's getting corrected. We're gonna have a madcap Moran Monday, I am certain. If you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, well, run on over to Head On Radio Network or Head On dot live. Where'd that come from? Run on over to Head On dot live. Click on chat room, and if you don't already have one, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. You'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Squeaky, who are awaiting your arrival. Ah, yes, that's true. I regret the omission. Steve in New York says, you forgot to say exponentially increasingly weird year. Yeah, it is and has been that. And it's going to be that until Nitwit Nero is no longer is no longer president of the United States. That's the only way I know to put it. Right. So, No, the podcasting issue, Brother Deacon Asa tells me, is not yet solved. Well, just remember, if you're having a hard time, you can, depending on how you podcast, you can always go direct to the source. You can go to whiterosesociety.org and get the podcast there. You can go to Podbean and get the podcast there. There's all kinds of different ways to go about things. And well, if you're having trouble, let me know, and I'll do what I can to help. Now, this being the first broadcast of a brand new month, we are sadly done with fundraising free radio. I know. but that's just how things go. And so we have thanks. We have thanks to extend for our subscribers for the second and the first day of the month over at PayPal. And that would mean saying thank you to our buddy Reggie and to Rocco and to Elizabeth, to Joseph, to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent, to Rusty, to Lauren, our correspondent out on the in the far frozen reaches of the Canadian version of the Rockies, and to Shorty in L.A. We also have thanks to send out to our friends down at Home Dirts. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very, very kindly. So those are our subscribers. If you'd like to be a subscriber, there's no better time to become one. And we need to do a little program note kind of talking. And I'll mention this several more times as we get nearer the date. But starting next Monday, okay? Next Monday. So that would be the 9th of December. The live broadcast time for this program is going to change. It's going to start, the program will start an hour earlier. All right? So the program now starts at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will start beginning next Monday, we will start at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we'll go 5 to 8 Eastern Standard Time versus 6 to 9. We'll go 5 to 8 Eastern Standard Time or 2 to 5 Pacific Standard Time. Again, this matters only to those of you who listen to the program live and not on the podcast, but that's what's coming a week from now. It's nothing critical. And it's certainly not because of any looming disaster or anything like that. It's just that I'm working on a new project, and it requires me to make this time shift so that I can also work on the project. Okay, I'll tell you more about the project as we get nearer to that as well. But starting next Monday, the program runs from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as they used to say at the phone company. Please make a note of it. Okay. So that's where that stands. Now, this being the first broadcast day of a brand new month, I'm happy to announce that Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table. We begin every new month with Bruce's Memorial Challenge in memory of our dear friend Bruce, who brought us Shirley's Memorial Challenge from Wisconsin, or Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Well, it was a couple of years back then when sadly Bruce passed on, and Laborman and Ralphs and one anonymous individual decided to pick up the ball and keep running with it so that we could have that early challenge to knock things down, start knocking down the bill paying for the coming month. So Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table for this evening. That means that there's $200 out there waiting to be matched. If the money gets matched, well, your contribution gets doubled. If we raise $200 tonight, that means that, well, courtesy of Laborman and Ralphs and the anonymous contributor, we will double your contributions and start the broadcast month with a bang. So jump right out there if you'd like to make your contribution to Bruce's challenge a matter of a subscription at the first of the month. That'd be awesome too. We badly need more subscribers. because it makes it a little easier to have an idea of what's happening from month to month. As you know, right now, we knocked out about a month of about a week of fundraising out of every month, thanks to our subscribers from both Patreon and our PayPal subscribers. And that's another thing to go into. Note from Steve in New York: I really hope that you've determined the increase in daily fundraising so you can obtain health coverage. Please let us know, because I, for one, am ready to step up. And that's another thing to be that's another thing to be determined. Another thing for us to talk about. I must say, I'm really taken with the idea of the fundraising free week. I like having at least that one week where, thanks to our subscribers, I get to not talk about fundraising. And so if we are to, if I'm to go out and get health care, and we talked about the premiums, the horrifying premiums, then, yeah, we're going to have to, we can do it one of two ways. We can just take things as they are and fundraise all month long at the current level, or we can continue with the one week of fundraising free radio and up the fundraising amount per evening to $300 from the $200 where it is. And that will essentially cover a healthcare premium from month to month. So I would appreciate your input. Anybody who wants to send an email that says something like, "How dare you tax the Horn Community Family Congregation? How dare you tax them for your fucking health care?" Well, you can fuck right off, okay? Because it's not a tax, and this program is not for sale. We've never sold anything here. We don't sell anything here. You can listen to the program, and the program will stay on the air for as long as it possibly can for free. Nobody's ever been billed a dime for any of this. So, that's where, but give me your thoughts. Bump it to $300 or just fundraise all month long. Steve seems to have an early opinion on this. Now I'm going to lecture you and hit you upside the head with a cyber cast iron skillet. Whank! If giving up a week of fundraising free radio allows you to get health care, fuck the fundraising free radio. I understand that, but there are two ways of going about it. And so I would like y'all to help choose, because it's as close to something like democracy as we can get here. And, you know, we're fond of democracy here. It's actually, it's practiced in the wild so precious damn little. And so, you know, your thoughts are welcome. Now, I have not signed on to a healthcare plan yet because I wanted to have this conversation first. And we've got through December the 15th for me to make the choice. I would prefer not to be making the choice on the 13th or the 14th or the 15th. But for those of you who are interested in expressing an opinion, I'd like to hear from you. So shoot me an email, reach out to me on Messenger, DM me on Twitter, you know, whatever. But let me know, and I'll make that, I'll make the decision based on, in at least in part, on your input. Okay? So that's where it all stands as we face this Moran Monday evening, the first of the month of the last month of the year. And you know, many times we come to the end of the year and we say, "Yeah, goodbye, old year. Damn you. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you." And we're supposed to be all optimistic and sunshiny and happy because it's a brand new year. But this is just another coming new year that's going to find this country in the gravest peril it has known since at least the Civil War, because, well, comb over Caligula is going to still be in office. Hey, there's Sailor Chick on in the chat room. Glad to see you, Sailor Chick. Ralph's, for instance, is saying, whatever you need to do, Bob, up to $300 or fundraise every day is fine. Maybe every day, and the more you get, the better. Hugs. Hugs right back, Ralph's. Thank you. Thank you very much. We've got a vote for fundraise all month long from Brother Deacon Asa. Okay. Well, looks like maybe fundraise all month long is off to an early start. Oh, thanks for the reminder, Brother Usher Steve, pointing out one last administrative point. Given that the 15th falls on a Sunday, you should probably double-check that the site to sign up will be live on a Sunday. I know the exchange site in New York goes down after 8 p.m. each night for maintenance, and I believe it's down all day Sunday. Ooh, thank you. Thank you for letting me know. That's important. And, frankly, I'd prefer to do the sign-up sooner rather than later. So that's where things stand. But enough prattle and babble. It's already eaten up 16 minutes of the program, and for that, I humbly apologize. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, an original founding member of the Sorority of Leans and a founding member of Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. Thank you, Charlene, for jumping in. We got $175 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you very, very kindly. I cannot thank you enough. Speaking of a member of the Sorority of Leans, Darlene in Connecticut says, wow, new start time? Okay, I can swing with it. Means I'll start dinner after 8 p.m. instead of 9. Might work better for me considering my late work schedule to begin with, and that I always try to eat well after the show, considering all those dinner-ruining conversations you tend to have and my trust in the shakiness of long-term memory. All right, good deal. So hopefully that will not, it's only an hour, so hopefully it won't push too much chaos into the situation. So where do I find ourselves this evening? Well, there's a lot of stuff going on down here, but the one thing that grabbed my attention first and foremost is an order from the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. And it's lengthy. It's a good 16 pages long. It was issued today. And I won't bother reading all of it, but it's important for one. And for two, it's kind of, well, surprising. I think that's an appropriate term. It comes from the pen of U.S. District Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson there in D.C. And it has to do with the so-called McGahn case. Committee on the Judiciary, United States House of Representatives plaintiff versus Donald F. McGahn II. And this has to do, previously, upon ruling against Nitwit Nero again,
so much losing,
in regard to Donald McGahn testifying, Judge Brown had originally imposed a temporary stay of execution of the court's order, giving time to the parties to argue, in particular, in this case, the DOJ, which really, you know, it just strikes me that this is not an argument for the DOJ. The DOJ is supposed to be quasi-independent, but, well, under the under the maladministration of Nitwit Nero, it has become just a cheap and tawdry thing, a sort of wartime consigliere for that racketeer-influenced corrupt organization known as Trump. But it's not very often that you find a U.S. district judge who blisters the DOJ the way that Judge Judge Jackson did. What it boils down to is in the original case, and I think we discussed this. In the original case, the Chlamydia Claudius administration argued that anyone who ever said so much as good morning to venereal Vespasian enjoys an absolute immunity from ever being called to testify about anything anywhere. The judicial equivalent of a non-disclosure order imposed upon, you know, everybody in the administration. Judge Jackson laughed that one out of court. For good reason, because there was no support whatsoever for the idea in American jurisprudence. Absolute immunity? No. That would mean that if a witness saw, for to use the metaphor that we've used in the past, because it comes in very handy, if a witness who was part of the maladministration happened to see Donald Trump sitting at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, one by one thumbing bullets into a magazine for an AR-15 and saying, "I'm going to get those no-good fuckers. I'm going to blow them all away. They don't appreciate me. I've got a very big brain. Article 2 of the Constitution gives me unlimited power, little bastards." And upon putting his, oh, I don't know, 100th fucking bullet into the magazine, smacked it up into the semi-automatic rifle, and this same member of the administration then saw Donald Trump take the AR-15, walk out of the White House, walk across Pennsylvania Avenue to Lafayette Square, and begin to mow down random people, cackling and shrieking and whatever, and we're assuming for purposes of this hypothetical that his hands were actually big enough to get all the way around the trigger so that he could, right. And so he commits a mass murder in Lafayette Square. The argument made by the Julius Geiser maladministration was that Congress could never call that witness to testify because that witness had absolute immunity. You see how ridiculous it is? Well, Judge Jackson, like I said, laughed the argument out of court, but in order to follow the normal course of the judicial process, Judge Jackson said, "Okay, I'll grant a stay. This thing won't go into effect for a couple of days." And so the Geiser Disgustus maladministration made their arguments. Counsel for the House committee made theirs. Yeah, exactly. A non-disclosure order? Flavio says, you mean an omerta? Very similar. Absolute immunity. Well, today, Judge Jackson entered an order lifting the stay. This means that Don McGahn's subpoena is servable and returnable now. And that's important. Because it's not going to be stayed pending appeal to the D.C. Circuit and then stayed pending appeal up to old Balls and Strikes Roberts and Ann's boy Neil and Sammy Bad Breath, shoot him at 30 feet in the back of the head as long as they're black and they're fleeing, even though they don't have a weapon, Alito. And, of course, Brat Kavanaugh. Not going to wait. Now, materially, this is important because it's a big damn deal. Insofar as it means that McGahn, being an officer of the court, had better goddamn well hurry on over and answer his subpoena that he's had since May. Yeah, May was a billion years ago as I sit here in a just slightly more than 50-degree studio. That part of the year hath begun. But one of the more important things out of the opinion rendered by Judge Jackson, apart from saying the stay is lifted, well, in the first in the opening part of the opinion, we get the broad answer. DOJ's motion to stay the court's order pending appeal will be denied for the reasons explained below. And in the kind of exhaustive explanation that only a federal district judge can render, a good one that is, Judge Jackson analyzes when and if stays are appropriate in such proceedings. In Section 2 of the opinion, Judge Jackson says, DOJ begins its stay request with the compelling assertion that the only other time that a district court issued an order requiring a senior presidential advisor to testify before Congress, the D.C. Circuit issued a stay pending appeal. Upon review of the D.C. Circuit's stay opinion in Myers, however, it is clear to this court that there are relevant differences between the stay order that the D.C. Circuit issued and in that case and the one that the DOJ seeks here, and goes into an analysis of why. But what is particularly interesting, as I said, is that Judge Jackson, who is well respected among members of the federal judiciary, Judge Jackson refers to the arguments put forward by Bill Barr to prosecution's DOJ as disingenuous, and its arguments regarding prior case law as unacceptable mischaracterizations. May not sound like much to us out here in the hinterlands, but that's the judicial equivalent of calling the DOJ lawyers who brought in these miserable arguments fucking liars. Disingenuous is a kissing cousin to the word dishonest. Judge Jackson told Bill Barr's DOJ that they were being dishonest with the court. That can have some pretty serious ramifications. And as for the term unacceptable mischaracterization, well, unacceptable means exactly what it says. That it was a characterization that should never have been put in good faith before a court. And when you run around making unacceptable mischaracterizations to a sitting Article III United States District Judge, bad shit can happen to you. Really bad shit. As Steve in New York says, sounds like someone may have a Rule 11 problem. There are lots of problems you can have as a lawyer. But one of the problems you really don't want to have is a Rule 11 problem. Because a Rule 11 problem can result in the court dropping sanctions on your ass. Even without the necessity of a motion, the court can do it on its own initiative, or in Latin, sua sponte. All the way up to and including the Attorney General himself. That's what did Grandpa Joe refer to it as? What did he say back when we were talking about the Affordable Care Act? That's a big fucking deal. Now, we should be clear, this does not mean that McGahn has to go in sackcloth and ashes to the Committee on the Judiciary. But what it does mean is that he has to respond to the subpoena. I'm sure the assholes are, even as we speak, filing yet another appeal for a stay to the D.C. Circuit. There's no stay in place, however, so if the D.C. Circuit hears the case, there won't be a stay then. And if the D.C. Circuit agrees with the clear reasoning of a respected judge, then I guess they go up to talk to old Balls and Strikes. In the meantime, however, the clock is ticking on a number of things, not the least of which is Don McGahn's law license. Because you flagrantly disregard the ruling of a federal judge at your own power or at your own peril. Now, McGahn doesn't have to show up and be waterboarded or anything. The opinion makes clear that he is within his rights, if he wishes, to show up and plead executive privilege. but he has to show up. And again, that's a big deal. Yeah, Flavio says, Judge Jackson, Bill Barr don't give a crap. Rule of law, I am the law. Until he's not. That's the problem with authoritarian regimes. This particular authoritarian regime, it's being superimposed over a system that is inherently resistant to it. And so it's not likely to be as ironclad as I am the law. And of course, this has impact upon a number of other outstanding subpoenas. I mean, it's kind of like it's as if there are four standards that apply to getting a stay on something like this, and Judge Jackson says, under the circumstances presented in this case, none of the four traditional factors that support a stay pending appeal weighs in favor of staying this court's order requiring McGahn to testify. In other words, strike one, strike two, strike three, strike four. You're out. And as to the underlying question of law itself, DOJ's likelihood of succeeding on appeal with respect to any of these arguments is exceedingly low. Two district court judges have now addressed each of DOJ's legal contentions on identical facts, and both have reached the same conclusions. In other words, if this was to go up to the Supremes, they wouldn't have to just disagree with Judge Jackson. They'd have to disagree with an entire line of reasoning and just sort of chuck stare decisis out into the cold. DOJ has failed to carry its burden of showing that the executive branch will be irreparably harmed. DOJ also cannot make a persuasive showing of irreparable harm in the absence of a colorable argument that McGahn's more mere appearance before the Judiciary Committee would, in and of itself, be harmful. Because Judge Jackson recognizes what's going to happen. Don McGahn, who got away from Nitwit Nero as quickly as he possibly could with his hide intact, will go before the committee and either plead A, executive privilege, or B, in regard to his own actions, the Fifth fucking Amendment. Something that, oddly enough, Nitwit Nero still doesn't understand. I guess he only thinks that people charged with crimes have that applied to them. Or maybe people charged with crimes who aren't him. You know, the whole you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Especially that part. Because he keeps running around making admissions that can and will be used against him in an impeachment proceeding. Steve, with another note. I admit I've not followed this as closely as I should have. Here's my understanding. The House committee subpoenaed Mazars. Trump has intervened in his personal capacity. The AG's client is the United States. How does the United States have standing here? The United States doesn't have standing. See, that's the problem. This is not Mazars. This is Don McGahn. The DOJ is acting as Donald Trump's personal lawyer. And that is, I think, arguably unethical to begin with. Because there is no good faith argument based upon the body of law regarding the service of subpoenas and who must honor them that says that people who work for the president and have information relative to an investigation are absolutely immune from ever having to show up. McGahn was counsel to the White House counsel. And so he arguably has some kind of privilege argument, attorney-client privilege, and the attorney-client privilege is for the client to assert and for the attorney to honor. But that doesn't go to the question of what a subpoena does and what a subpoena means. If you or I received a subpoena from a congressional committee and we said, fuck off, we're absolutely immune because, oh, I don't know. Let's just, for the purpose of the hypothetical, assume for a moment that we're all maggots. Okay, now everybody pretend that your IQ is a tenth of what it is. Now you're a Trump voter. And if you said, fuck the Congress's subpoena. I'm a Trump voter. I'm making America great again, and I ain't got to show up. The U.S. Marshals would show up and be none too solicitous in insisting upon your attendance. And it's the attendance part that sent that this case applies to. McGahn, dirtbag. I mean, you worked for Trump. Show up. Assert attorney-client privilege. Assert executive privilege. Take the Fifth fucking Amendment. Do whatever you want, but honor the process. Show up. Follow the damn rules. You've been a lawyer for a long time, Don. This is not how you want to see your legal career end. So that just seemed an appropriate place to start for this evening. And compare it, if you will, because that's some solid legal reasoning on the part of the district court. Compare that with one of the alleged leading lights of the law in Merca. And I'm talking about Professor Alan Dershowitz. Stop laughing. Now, granted, Dershowitz, a lot of the shine went off of him a long time back. There we go, Brother Deacon Asa. Make America grift again. What's that, Todd, in South Carolina, Stan? Todd says, you talking a whole lot of shit. Well, Don McGahn's going to be in it. And the DOJ is arguably in it. I can imagine that late this afternoon they read that order when it came down, and all of a sudden that career DOJ job that you always thought you wanted and now has you out there serving as a personal lick-spittle lawyer to Donald Trump, well, you might be looking back and thinking, you know, Mama told me to be a piano player in a whorehouse. I wonder if it's too late. But Alan Dershowitz yesterday showed up on the electric TV box to do some lecturing on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda about impeachment. I dare say at this point in time, you and I can opine with more credibility about impeachment than Alan Dershowitz can, because Alan Dershowitz's only job is to try desperately to provide cover for Nitwit Nero. He was talking to Maria Bartiromo. It didn't go well. Do let's check in with the tail of the tape.
After 2 weeks of public impeachment hearings, 12 witnesses, nearly 30 hours of testimony, both Republicans and Democrats are claiming victory. But who really has the edge moving forward? After a week where Congress had to explain what it's been doing over the Thanksgiving weekend holiday, Alan Dershowitz is a Harvard Law Professor Emeritus and the author of the book, Guilty by Accusation. Great to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So what do you think your takeaway is from these last couple of weeks in terms of the public hearings and this move to impeach President Trump?
Congress is not above the law. They just can't make it up as they go along. The Constitution provides specific criteria for impeachment, and I think these hearings demonstrate beyond any doubt that these criteria haven't been met.
See, like I told you, this went off the rails early. The Constitution provides specific criteria. Yep. Treason, bribery, and high crimes and misdemeanors. Congratulations, there's your criteria. We've had hours and hours of testimony on the bribe that Venerial Vespasian offered to Volodymyr Zelensky in exchange for lying about an American citizen, two American citizens in point of fact. We've even got the president himself speaking into cameras and recording him as he calls for not just Ukraine, but China to tell lies about an American citizen. But see, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda brought Alan Dershowitz on because he's supposed to have this reputation as some sort of noble pleader. And Emery and Marveline sitting in their matching Barca loungers down to the trailer park, well, they'll just say, well, that Alan Dershowitz, you know, he's a Jew. If one of them Jew lawyers says it, it's got to be true. Did I say it right, Brother Deacon Asa? Because that's how the maggot mind works. Congress isn't making stuff up as it goes along. Congress has the absolute right to do Congress's business. And they don't have to say, Mother, may I, to a saffron-colored psychopath.
All about policies. Do you agree or disagree with how the president handled the Ukraine? Those are reasonable bases for deciding who to vote for.
No, it's not a disagreement about policy. It is the fact that the president of the United States is not allowed to bribe someone else to do dirty business for him, which we have irrefutable evidence that he done did. Yeah, what's that, Lee? Lee in New York says Fifth Amendment. Trump invoked the Fifth Amendment? Stop it, Bob. Stop it. Stop it, Bob. Stop it. Could he read five amendments? Could he get through the First Amendment? He doesn't know Article 2. I doubt he could make it past We the People. Obligatory Star Trek reference. Eid plebnista. Trump read? Insert hearty laugh. Oh, please. You're not Sarah Mouthpiece. I know. True. But we have to take some of these things into account just the same. So his first arguments that come out of his mouth are epic fails. It doesn't get any better.
But nothing that I've seen during these weeks of impeachment testimony has moved the ball at all toward impeachment.
What he means is I haven't watched any of this. because if he'd seen any of it, somebody with his, some eminence gris such as he would go, okay, they got him.
If he's impeached, it will be partisan.
It's been the process.
Now, and see, that's a red herring. If he's impeached, it'll be partisan. There's nothing in the Constitution that says it has to be bipartisan. And it's only going to be partisan because the maggots continue to keep their nose buried on that in that part of Nitwit Nero where the sun never shines, fortunately. And, well, there goes dinner in the central time zone. Fortunately, Donald Trump has not been caught sunning his perineum yet, as we were discussing on Friday on the front porch. Never mind. Sorry. Yeah, sorry, Darlene. Maybe you'll be over it by the time the program's over. Mm-hmm. It simply says, may be impeached for treason, bribery, and high crimes and misdemeanors. And as we've discussed before on this program, and apparently Alan Dershowitz is willfully failing to note, high crimes and misdemeanors is a term of art from the 18th century that takes in bad behavior by the President of the United States.
That the Republicans are really complaining about the fact that Devin Nunes can't yield his time to somebody else, or the fact that the Republicans can't call their own witnesses.
Oh, Maria, you dirty little liar. They were operating under rules that the Republicans put in when they had the majority. But you won't tell that to Emery and Marveline, will you, Maria? Maria, Maria, I just met a liar named Maria.
Without checking with Adam Schiff, what is your reaction to the process?
Well, it's very, very unfair. I mean, the impeachment...
Oh, well, if it's very, very unfair, then certainly Alan Dershowitz has seized the day.
The process is quasi-criminal in nature, and the person...
Now, hold on here, because this is hilarious.
Process.
Well, it's very, very unfair. I mean, the impeachment process is quasi-criminal in nature, and the person being accused is supposed to have rights comparable to the rights of somebody being accused of crime.
This is bullshit out of whole cloth. Maybe Alan Dershowitz made it all the way through law school, had a distinguished career practicing criminal law. Maybe he became a highfalutin celebrity law professor at Harvard University without ever reading a single goddamn word of the Federalist Papers. But I would be surprised by that. Or maybe I wouldn't. I mean, there's a lot of critiques to be made of the highfalutin Ivy League these days. But all one need do is open said Federalist Papers, and one will find, pretty lickety-split, the idea that, no, impeachment is a process neither legal nor criminal nor civil, but in fact political. It partakes of elements of process which are reminiscent of criminal, civil, what have you. But that doesn't mean it is one. It partakes of those elements because that was the nature of the structure under which the framers of the Constitution were operating. But if it was a criminal or quasi-criminal process, then you would have to have a unanimous verdict in the Senate and not two-thirds majority. Okay? I mean, I guess the quasi-criminal argument can be made in terms of the fact that the House hearing impeachment or pondering impeachment acts much as a grand jury does in considering an indictment, insofar as they judge the evidence, they take the evidence, they judge the evidence, and then they vote on whether or not to issue an indictment. That's how the criminal process works. But that's pretty much where it ends. And by the way, complaining about the process, and why can't Donald Trump cross-examine no witnesses? Well, that's Congress's job, and there's nothing about the president doing that in Article 2 or Article 1. And in fact, you don't get to go, let's say a grand jury is considering a criminal case against, say, Junior. He's not in the administration, he's just a private citizen. Well, Junior doesn't get to go in and cross-examine the witnesses against him before the grand jury, because grand jury proceedings are secret. And the very fact that these hearings were not secret, were held in the open, that the deposition testimony was released, show that this is actually a more open process than any criminal defendant has ever been afforded by a prosecutor in front of a grand jury. But still, they piss and moan.
The Constitution talks about high crimes and misdemeanors, and yet the process has been skewed and one-sided and partisan. You know, it was Alexander Hamilton who said quite clearly, we do not want a partisan process where impeachment turns on who has the most votes, and that's what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Hold the fuck on. I guarantee you Alexander Hamilton did not say what he just said Alexander Hamilton said. How in the hell are you going to get a bill of impeachment out of the House if you don't have the most votes? We're going to let the minority do the impeaching? That's just crazy talk. Steve in New York says, Alan the Dersh Dershowitz has always been a douche, but only recently, in my opinion, a fucking douche. I've been thinking of this. Recall that the Dersh was caught up in the Epstein scandal. Yes, he was. He maintained that he only met with women of age. I think someone close to Nitwit Nero has the goods on the Dersh insofar as him meeting with women who were not of age. Now he's a dirty knees to Nitwit Nero. On a lighter note, I bought a copy of the Mueller report that the GPO, Government Printing Office, printed. You know, the official copy. Who wrote the intro? You guessed it. Alan the Dersh Dershowitz. P.S. Devin Nunes did yield his time to others. Other Republicans did the same thing. P.P.S. As I recall, after the Judiciary Committee offered to have the Harangutan's counsel come and cross-examine witnesses, he declined. Yeah, that was in the last day or so. They said, well, come on over. I mean, you can cross-examine the witnesses.
No.
So they've been pissing and moaning about not getting to cross-examine anybody. So Gerald Nadler called them on their bullshit, and they said, oh, we didn't mean it. We're just going to piss and moan and obfuscate, okay? Right.
Lindsey Graham has been on this program saying it's dead on arrival in the Senate unless we interview the whistleblower. And yet they're, you know, tiptoeing around the whistleblower. What do you think about that?
Well, time out with the whistleblower real quick. If it is not abundantly clear, and I hope it is to us, although it may not be to Emery and Marvelline down in the trailer park. If the Democrats said, okay, fuck it, fuck the federal law, fuck anonymity, fuck protecting the whistleblower, we're gonna let you interview him and cross-examine him, and you kill him if you want to, because, and I'm saying him because I'm assuming, but them, if you want to, because ultimately, remember, that's the goal of outing the whistleblower, making it possible to eliminate the whistleblower. You know what the Republicans would do? Oh, it's too late. Yeah, we can't. It's too late. Our hair. We've got to wash our hair. The dog ate our notes, and unfair. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says regarding impeachment as a criminal process, we got that covered too. Trump's spray tan is a fucking hate crime. There, you happy? You happy, Alan Dershowitz? First cowbell of the evening, and the first cowbell of the month of December goes to Brother Deacon Asa. Let's talk about the whistleblower.
Should the whistleblower come out and explain these charges?
He will, eventually, or she will. We don't know who it is. There's no doubt that this can't go forward to the Senate without a full opportunity to cross-examine all the relevant witnesses, and the Republicans will be able to subpoena the whistleblower. We have to balance the right of the whistleblower against retaliation against the right of the person being accused to produce witnesses.
Here's the funny part. They don't want to interview the whistleblower. All the whistleblower stuff is nothing but blue smoke and mirrors. And by the way, in terms of cross-examining anybody, if a bill of impeachment is voted out of the House, it goes to the Senate as a matter of constitutional law. And the Republicans won't want to call any witnesses. Because if they do, well, national opinion, watching it live, national opinion is liable to, for impeachment and removal, is liable to go higher than it already is. And it might just make all of those maggots, those maggot senators, right squirmy. They'll talk about doing video or something like that, and they'll deliberate behind closed doors, you understand. Todd in South Carolina, Stan, has a serious question. Well, don't hide your light under a bushel basket, Todd. Ask it, my friend. But make no mistake, they don't want any part of the whistleblower. Now, granted, some of them have probably been going over and reading the articles at that website that rhymes with light and fart. But when the rubber meets the road, they don't want any part of the whistleblower. Because they don't know entire... They don't know what other bats are going to come squeaking out of the belfry in a situation like that. Like I said, it's going to be a big Moran night. DOJ, Alan Dershowitz. We're only an hour into the program. But I have thanks to send out, because we're making real progress on Bruce's Memorial Challenge. You'll recall the last we heard, we were down to 175. Well, we have made progress. For instance, Sailor Chick took us down to 150. And Louie took us down to 1.25. And Brian took us down to 105. Renee in D.C. took us down to 95. And so we're better than halfway there in the first hour of the program, and that's very much encouraging. $95 to go to meet Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you all very, very kindly. Thank you. So it would be great if we could finish off the challenge and do a little bit of a fundraising free radio for even the evening, if we can wipe it out in the next few minutes. The rest of the program goes fundraising free. Okay. And let's run over and find out what Todd's question is. Hey, Todd. Yeah.
Okay. So you piqued my curiosity and my
I didn't peek at nothing. I swear. I was using that telescope to look at the moon, Your Honor.
Oh God! Don't get me started on that.
Sorry.
When you were talking about George Jackson and his boy Elroy and his daughter Judy, that was George Jackson. But seriously, I have a craw. It's like I have this piece of fishbone in my teeth that I can't get out, and it looks like the Attorney General, because he's an irritant and he needs to go.
Yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, the way that we hear these pundits talk about him is, he's, reputable. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? You can't tell me that shit. I was around. I was paying attention. No, he's not. And he lived up to my expectations. So I don't know what these other people are surprised about. But my question is that the reason that we have to impeach, maybe, and what I don't understand that other people aren't seeing is that, it's a quandary, really, because what happens is that when you have institutions like this in place, because this regime is an institution now, there has been a coup. He has gotten rid of credible people in key positions and replaced them with stooges. And, I mean, that's not an opinion. If you really look at it, that's just the way things have functioned.
So, and you know what? If you want to think about it, there's even three of them. Mulvaney, Pompeo, and Barr. Three stooges.
And Barr. Right. Oh, God. That's a bell.
Oh.
Come on. You know that's a yes.
I don't give myself cowbells unless
they are the three stooges, and they all have an entourage. Each one of them has an entourage. It's not just like this single people operating, in
an isolation. Hey, Bill. Yeah.
So, what is supposed to separate us from these despotic nations that we hold ourselves up higher?
I know. Pick me. The rule of law.
Very good. You were paying attention last week in class, weren't you?
I was trying.
See? So
just because my eyes are all red and glassy doesn't mean I'm not taking notes.
Oh God. That happens when you read a lot, especially small print.
Oh, that happens to me all the time.
Wake up and it's like, damn, I burst another blood vessel. Wow. So I don't know if it's just me thinking about this, but it's a quandary, because we're not supposed to incarcerate the previous people from the previous administration as a nicety. We don't do that. Cause we remember like Idi Amin and Mugabe and other folks on the European side.
And if you're the framers of the Constitution, Todd, remember they were classically trained and classically schooled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that caused the Roman Republic to devolve and eventually morph into empire. Because it was so partisan that it became routine to prosecute the previous year's consuls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when the Senate told told Julius Caesar that the only way he could come home was if he gave up his legions and entered Rome as a private citizen. Well, Caesar knew he was a dead man if he did that. And if he wasn't a dead man, he was going to be prosecuted, exiled, denied fire and water within however many miles of Rome. And that would be it for old Gaius. And he wasn't the only one. So the framers went to pains to not do that. And generally speaking, the presidents, all flawed individuals though they were, tried not to do things that would make their predecessors want to prosecute them. And were largely successful. But and this was occurring within a backdrop of a young federal government that was nothing if not rowdy and boisterous.
You fleshed that out. Exactly. I mean, disparate interests. You know, a lot of them had nothing in common, except they had money and they were white and men.
Yeah. I mean, the differences between, say, an Andrew Jackson and a John Quincy Adams, you can't get much more different than those two individuals. Or a Buchanan and a Lincoln. And even moving into the modern era, Warren Gamaliel Harding died in office, handing off to Calvin Coolidge. But when FDR finally got his hands on the reins of power, he didn't say, okay, let's go back and prosecute that fucking Coolidge. Yeah, we'll make him talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll charge him with a crime and see if he talks then. No. Even though the Teapot Dome scandal had happened on Harding's watch.
Yeah, if you want to look at it like that, they set up the Great Depression with the laissez-faire politics.
Sure. And so, as irritating as it was, and it was irritating, I remember very well how frustrated, because George W. Bush and Count Dicula and Don Rumsfeld and that guy who put his comb in his hair and the rest of that gang of bloodthirsty freaks did start an illegal war. And if ever there was a case for prosecuting someone after a president after he left office, Dim Leader was the one. And that's what made us all just bark at the fucking moon when Barack Obama said, now we've got to look forward and not back.
Yep.
And while I disagreed with it at the time, and it feels like that we probably set something in motion that will eventually come back and hurt us a lot worse, I at least understand his motives in saying that. Because he was a brand new president, he had an agenda that he wanted to get through, and he did not want to have his presidency eaten alive by the criminal prosecution of George W. Bush. And if you thought that the 8 years of Barack Obama were just a racist playdate for white supremacists, imagine what it would have been had a relatively independent independent DOJ said, fuck it. Man, he committed war crimes.
He killed a million
innocent civilians. We can't let this slide.
No. So you laid the groundwork. Okay, so this is what I'm having trouble with. Now, because of the failure of the Electoral College to do their final job as a safety valve to say, this is not a good fit. We're really human resources in a way. We are the Electoral College. I'm talking as them. This is not a good fit. I'm sorry. We're just going to have to go with the popular vote. Instead of doing that, we have to put up with this nonsense. Because now this regime is actually bearing fruit of what many of us thought they would be. And now when you have to hold them to account, we had a stat significant amount of this population that has been manipulated and, you know, for different reasons or not manipulated or whatever. It doesn't really matter.
With regard to a whole bunch of the maggots, I'm not sure how much I'm willing to believe they were manipulated. Because some of them just flat out wanted Donald Trump because they wanted somebody in office who hated all the same people they hated. And it started. Well, you know, it started with Hillary. It included Barack Obama, and anybody who ever said anything halfway decent about Barack Obama.
I'm totally with you on that. And if I'm talking too loud, I apologize.
No, you're good.
With you. Okay, because we honestly, now looking back, every month that goes by, I'm like, you know, we are dealing with all this bullshit. For a majority of this bullshit, over 60%, is because we had a little happy-ass Negro and his family running around in the White House. And there's a lot of people who just thought that was inappropriate. And I'm sorry if people don't understand that, but there are a lot of people out here who really had just lost their fucking minds over that. So we're dealing with the backlash.
The white lash.
The white lash, exactly. I mean, right. So I'm like, I don't even know what to say. But that I don't want to get off on that tangent because that's a whole other topic. But so now that we've been drugged down into this muck, you know, what do we do? Because clearly this is the third attorney general who is a criminal by lying to Congress. We've had Supreme Court justices in their job interview lie, and they're in there. They continue to act in illegal ways. He just played Dershowitz, and that, you know, I had 4 minutes my comment even before you started with his dumb ass, and he's supposed to be, not supposed to be, he's emeritus. He knows better. He misdemeanor. It's not about, like, if you're on the street getting convicted of or charged with a crime. That doesn't mean shit. It doesn't matter. Are you living up to what we expect you to be as a president? That's what it matters. It matters whatever the House says it is. That's what it comes down to. That's why it's political. It's not that fucking complicated. You know, if I'm wrong here, jump in.
No. You're right on the money so far.
So I don't understand why people are having such difficulty. This is a criminal. These people are criminal. Now, and they're forcing us to do this. If we don't do this, you know, if we don't do it, we'll be wrong. And we're wrong doing it in a way, maybe, and maybe not. I don't see, I mean, I'm just trying to get people.
Well, no, you're rapidly approaching the answer. The only answer is for everyone to bow a knee to Donald. You know, you can't take a knee at the anthem, but you can damn sure take a knee for Donald Trump, because he is our Lord and Savior.
Who said that?
Well, the maggots do.
Well, God bless Donald Trump.
I mean, he's...
We're in a bad place.
Oh, by the way, thank you to Steve from Georgia Stan with the reminder. Yeah, Paul Wolfowitz was the guy with his comb in his mouth. Ew.
Oh, Steve. No one wants to be in this position. You know, I don't think. But I just don't understand the fact that we're in this muck. We're in this muck. Because it's not just this regime. It's not just this president. It's the whole.
Well, no. If you watch the Sunday shows, from John Kennedy of Louisiana to Doug Collins from Georgia. Jesus Christ, it was an embarrassing weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, John Kennedy is still won't admit that the whole bullshit matter of, well, that Ukraine meddled in our elections too is exactly that, bullshit. He will not admit it. He has decided that he, by God, is going to go down in flames with Donald Trump, or else he's going to succeed with him. And at this point in time, the people of Louisiana stand are telling him that they want him to, you know, eat whatever it is that Donald Trump puts in front of him. And so he's gonna.
Well, Russia has succeeded. No matter what happens, they have succeeded. They have. And this is I keep going back to this argument. No matter what you think about Russia influence or collusion, corruption, whatever you want to call it, the act, the result is the same. You know, even it's even happening in Great Britain. You know, NATO is being dissolved slowly. Things are changing in Russia's favor. Everything's happening is in Russia's favor. You know, and you can't hate Russia for wanting another warm water port. In
no, but just because they want one doesn't mean they get one.
Well, exactly. That's right. See, that's the thing, making an observation and an opinion. Right. Now, I don't want them to have it, but I mean, of course, if you're Putin, of course, that's what you want.
And it gets worse, by the way. Mike in Cascadia just sent me a tweet from someone by the name of Frank Thorpe the Fifth. Frank Thorpe V. Senate Intel Committee Chairman Senator Burr, quote, "Every elected official in the Ukraine was for Hillary Clinton. Is that very different than the Russians being for Donald Trump?" Well, yeah, it kind of is, because every elected official, even assuming that's true, didn't deploy a goddamn troll army, didn't play footsie and hell with footsie, didn't get all naked and roll around all hot and sweaty with WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, and didn't burglarize the RNC and DNC servers.
Right.
Russia right. did. By the way, you got a note from Steve up in New York. Oh, dear Todd, here is why people are having difficulty understanding this. It's very difficult to convince someone of something when their paycheck is contingent upon them not understanding it. Ta-da.
Mm.
And it's true. And some of them who aren't even getting paid refuse to understand it because it validates the hate, the festering, pustulant, vicious, oozing hate that courses through their bodies every day. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got a disease and you can't get well, misery loves company.
It does, doesn't it? And you know, and my final thought on this, is that. On that wonderful internet channel that many of us like, I'm not going to plug it, but it starts with you. There's a documentary. It's rather long. It's called KGB Connections. And so to think that many of our Congress people are on the take with Russia is not fanciful. It's not.
No, and you always, you always have to, the one thing more than anything, any other, that you have to look at is, hey, how about all those sweet, sweet rubles that poured into the NRA? And then just go through Open Secrets or whatever and find all the Republicans that got all those sweet, sweet rubles. You know, some of this is Occam's razor stuff, Todd.
That is simple. See, I like what you said there, because let's be frank. The DNC is not taking as much money from the NRA as the Republicans. We know that they're in bed together. And, I mean, you could almost, you search hard enough, you can see. I mean, they already arrested and deported a spy who had infiltrated.
In bed, you can hear the fapping, man.
So this is not fanciful thinking, you know. And when you watch, I would encourage everyone to watch that documentary. And it goes back to, it starts early. And it goes all the way up through the 80s, 90s. I mean, even in Great Britain, I think one guy's name was Shelby in Great Britain. And he was an ambassador. He had all the secrets.
You mean Philby?
Philby. Thank you. I was like, I keep watching. It's so much information. I'm like, what the fuck, man? They're doing this shit. This shit is not new. I mean, we know it's not new, but it really is. This is like out of the movies. You know, there was a reason that those James Bond movies were that good. The shit was going on. They probably had iPhones then. They just weren't public. You know, think about those microphone cameras they had.
Well, I mean, Maxwell Smart had a phone in his shoe, right?
Yeah. It was powered by foot funk. That's right. But, Man, this is I'm telling KGB connection. It is this that documentary is no joke. KGB connections. If one has the time, just whenever you're at work or you're getting ready to go to sleep or you got some free time in the car, put that on. It's going to tell you. It's so much information. You have to listen to it a couple of times. But it very much mirrors. I mean, these people are embedded deep into geopolitics in Great Britain and here.
One of the advantages that a state like Russia has, because they are an authoritarian state, because they are largely a closed society, because they do not enjoy the sort of freedoms that obtain in the so-called Western liberal democracies, they can exploit the freedoms that we do have for their own ends, whereas we have a much more difficult time doing the same to them because they are closed, paranoid, authoritarian, dictatorial, tyrannical regimes.
All right, then, if we accept that premise to be true, then don't we need to be more vigilant?
Well, yeah. Yeah, and by the way, along these lines, I'm sure you've seen that the Inspector General's report of the DOJ is due out any minute now, like this week, in mm-hmm. regard to what has been cast by everybody from Bill Barr to prosecution to Nitwit Nero himself as the FBI and the intelligence agencies spying on the Trump campaign.
They were doing their job.
They were doing their damn jobs, and that's exactly what Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General of the FBI, is about to say.
Well,
thank God. Well, apparently, you know, little rumors and dribblings of the report are, of course, slipping out. And the Washington mm-hmm. Post just reported this evening, Attorney General William P. Barr has told associates he disagrees with the Justice Department's Inspector General on one of the key findings in an upcoming report, namely that the FBI had enough information in July 2016 to justify launching an investigation into members of the Trump campaign, according to people familiar with the matter. So the report's not even out, and yet Barr is already trying to do a Mueller report on it and say that it doesn't say what it says it says. He's actively trying to change the content of the report to get out in front of the narrative so that the American people will once again be bamboozled and baffled by bullshit.
Okay, since you brought it up, and since Barr, up,
I mean, yeah, I just want to, let's be clear. Barr himself, that dirtbag,
mm-hmm.
Barr himself made the claim that the government spied on the Trump campaign.
Yes, he did. And he said, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. He made it very clear. He made it. He made
and so
it
by,
clear,
clear. And so by sending up this little trial balloon, Barr is telling the Inspector General, I guess you don't like being Inspector General now, do you?
Well, see, this
nice
is,
little
this
job
is no
you
mark.
Got there, Inspector General. Be shame what? If something happened to it.
Well, see, this is what I'm saying. This guy wants to be. This, look, this is a
it's a mob
regime.
Operation.
Right. You got to go. You're not falling in line. But so they keep all right. They weed out people who are doing their jobs in favor of folk who are just going to do what they're told to do. While they maintain a public persona of. We are serving the American people, and we are totally transparent. You know, meanwhile, they got the goons in. This is disgusting. This is why this shit has to stop. And you know what? And so I'm trying to play a little chess here. So we know that the leader, you know, he won't be removed. But, you know, he could be impeached again when and if he wins again, because he'll just do more. I mean, he's all emboldened now. But we need to go after Barr because fuck him. He has a law. Take his goddamn law license and cut what little nuts he has off. Fuck him. You know, he's got to go. He has got to go because he has to know better. And he did his dirty shit back in the day and did a lot of people wrong. Fuck him. You know, Trump is mentally ill. I don't know that Bill Barr is mentally ill. He's just an evil fucker. But he has to go. And that's what I hope that that's what Nancy Pelosi, I hope that she concentrates on that. Because he is operating illegally. He never should have had that job. He lied on his job interview. He lied to Congress. When asked about foreign influence, he's like, I don't know. I have to look at it. It depends. Don't depend on shit. And now look where we are.
Oh, and by the way, it's rather of an interesting news evening because the other thing that happened is you remember when Congress went to court to get Mueller's notes from his investigation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're out.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, they're out. They're out in a big way. One of the things, and it's right in line with what we're talking about here, is that Hope Hicks, remember Precious Hopey?
Oh, poor Hope Hicks.
You know, he loved Hope Hicks. He loved her so much. And then she had to go.
She pressed his crotch, didn't she?
Well, let's not go there. People are having dinner.
Well,
she gave testimony to the FBI. And she told the FBI agents that Nitwit Nero was scared shitless that if the American people learned the truth about what, because this acknowledges Trump knows what the Russians did, because he was actively engaged in getting the Russians to do what the Russians did. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you find your emails. And the next day, within hours, they're hacking. The Russians are. Okay, that's not a coincidence, and that's damn sure not
that
a boating
was
accident.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Not a boating accident. So Hope Hicks described Venerial Vespasian's terror that the American people would learn the truth about Russian election meddling It was his kryptonite, his Achilles heel.
Oh.
Hicks told FBI agents that Trump feared the unanimous assessment of the U.S. intelligence community that Russia meddled in the election to help his campaign was his kryptonite. Because after all, you know, he thinks of himself as stupid man. I mean, Superman.
Wait a minute. Those are her words?
Yeah.
Holy shit!
It was his Achilles heel.
Those are her words from her deposition?
Yes. Achilles heel.
Under oath.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
She went on to tell the FBI that he was, quote, angry, surprised, and frustrated when Mueller was appointed special counsel, and that in terms of her long association with him, she had only seen him like that on one other occasion, and that was when the Access Hollywood tape came out talking about where he bragged about committing sexual assault at will. Angry, surprised, and frustrated. Because, see, his fixers were supposed to have all of that shit covered.
Oh.
I mean, let's find a few other good little nuggets. Rod Rosenstein. Remember when we thought Rod Rosenstein was a good guy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rod Rosenstein and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III had a little chat about getting rid of Comey during the presidential transition.
No shit.
Yeah.
So.
But then when Nitwit Nero did shit can Comey, Rosenstein told the FBI he was angry, ashamed, horrified, and embarrassed at how Nitwit Nero handled it. Because Comey was sent an email and not told by the president directly. You know, that's not according to Marcus of Queensberry rules.
Of course it is.
And in addition, Precious Hopi Hicks, said that she had a conversation about how to handle the Trump Tower meeting, you know, the one that Junior was at.
Mm-hmm.
She told the FBI that she told Julius Geezer, "This is going to be a massive story. The president did not want to talk about it and did not want the details."
Well,
in other words, she was part of it. In other words, she confessed to being part of a criminal conspiracy, and even so, Mueller couldn't bring himself to charge her.
No. Well, you know, no. And Mueller, you know, that's why I cringe when I hear people say the Mueller report found nothing. I don't understand where people get off saying that. You'd be reprimanded every time they do say that.
And then when they were at the G20 in July 2017, Hopi actually, it was apparently Hopi's job to present terrible news while being beautiful. It sort of took some of the sting out of it for the pervert in chief. And so it was at the G20 when she told Nitwit Nero about the Times about to break a story about the Trump Tower meeting. And she said, "The president asked what the meeting was about. I told him it was about his son-in-law and Junior. And it was about Russian adoption. And the president said words to the effect of, then just say that, and then dictated what she should say." He told her the lie to tell.
Well, okay. Now, see, now you're bringing up articles of impeachment. Other people need to talk to you, but what is wrong with Pelosi? There has to be at least there are at least four, clearly four. You don't just go with one or two.
This is Nadler's conundrum. When a pedophile has been a sexual abuser for years,
mm-hmm.
if the investigation is good enough, a good prosecutor can come away with a 500-count indictment. Okay? And generally speaking, people kind of look at those and go, oh, that's a little bit of overkill. And the prosecutor usually responds by saying, by God, I had evidence of 500 counts. What do you want me to do? Throw some of them away? Because how am I piling on against somebody who diddled a child 500 times? That's sort of the conundrum that Nadler faces, because if you start getting down into the really granular shit here, this bill of impeachment could be 1,000 counts long. Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not much.
No, not much. But that's why it has to be more than that. It has to be at least three. I mean,
they'll get three out of Ukraine. But what do you do about the 10 instances of obstruction of justice? What do you do about the four federal felonies that have already been pled guilty to by one of the conspirators? What do you do about dictating a lie about a meeting his son and son-in-law were in?
Right.
Because even though Alan Dershowitz says that it's a quasi-criminal proceeding, well, okay, then it's a quasi-fucking crime to deliberately lie to the people of the United States. Because I seem to recall, because I was around in the late 90s, I recall when Bill Clinton shook that fucking knuckle at us and said, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans from sea to shining sea screamed, "Woo, Jesus, the flag is fallen. Oh, my God, what'll we tell the children? We got to impeach him double quick." Remember? He lied to the American people, and he even done it on the TV.
With us, that's, you know, those of us of a certain age, this is what we can't get over. If you want to, everybody lies about sex. You're supposed to lie about sex. You're not supposed to, but, I mean, that's life. People don't like to hear the truth. Did you sleep with her? Well, no. If you tell her, yeah, you know, what the hell? Are you gonna?
Oh, no. Now you're back into the big Jim Folsom defense. Big Jim, is it true that you slept with that woman in that motel room in Mobile? It's a goddamn lie. Ain't neither one of us got a wink of sleep.
But look, if you are going to impeach someone over about sex, now of course he was not supposed to be having sex in the White House, in the Oval Office, or wherever in there, in the little ante room, whatever. Yes, that's true.
And then there's and then there's Jay Sekulow. Remember Jay Jay Sekulow.
He's
right there advising away. Jay Sekulow is a good, fine Christian man. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes as no surprise to find out that and again, this is from Mueller's notes, to find out that Michael Cohen told Sekulow that, you know, there's some stuff that was in the Trump Tower Moscow meeting that didn't go into the statement that we've given to Congress. Like the fact that there were more communications with Russia and more communications with Donald Trump. So the good Christian Jay Sekulow says, quote, not necessary to elaborate or include those details because the transaction did not take place.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the lawyer for the president was taking the position that the Trump Tower meeting never happened. Sekulow said it did not matter and Cohen should not contradict Trump and that it was time to move on.
That's a lie.
That's from Cohen's own interview.
Well, all right. And we
oh, but wait, because this is kind of a big deal. Evidence of okay. conspiracy that it is. Cohen also told the investigators that he was informed that he was a member of what was called a joint defense agreement, and that he was protected under that joint defense agreement unless he went rogue. Protected and went rogue are direct quotes from the notes.
I mean, that's how subjective you want to be. He went rogue from the minute he took office. Oh, I'm missing something. I don't know. He is the president, right?
Well, yeah. No, if he went rogue is Michael Cohen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, some of these notes just because... It becomes abundantly obvious that the unseen hand doing all the writing on the wall was Bill Barr. Because how does this not get into the report? The documents detail how, and this is from CNN's reporting, the documents detail how much former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort was coaxing his aide Rick Gates not to flip, and include several examples where Manafort told Gates what he was supposedly hearing from Trump, Trump's then-personal attorney John Dowd, and White House advisor Jared Kushner. At one point, Manafort had apparently been speaking with attorneys and heard Trump say in the room, "Stay strong," Gates said Manafort had told him. Manafort also said to Gates he had an email of support from Kushner, Trump's son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And
terrible.
Somehow, and see, if half of this shit had made it fully into the report, Mueller never could have fallen back on that OLC ruling, because the only conclusion you can reach is that the conspiracy was so broad and so deep that the government, that constitutional governance of the United States of America was in immediate jeopardy, utterly imperiled, and that only the prosecution of the United States of America would suffice to save our republic.
Oh, God.
I mean, this is kind of like watching the Zapruder film and then yeah. and then having somebody discover that there was more Zapruder film?
Right. Those notes are the yarn.
That there's B-roll of the guy behind the fence on the grassy knoll.
Got it from two or three angles, not just one angle.
Yeah.
Oh, we got the whole, we got all of it. This is damning.
Yeah, and that there's even footage of Lee Harvey Oswald walking down the sidewalk and stopping to pitch pennies with some boys in the alley. This is some hot shit.
So you know, another thread to that is another angle for that Zapruder film is, you know, remember how they were begging and begging and begging for these back channels to Russia even before the inauguration? They were like, "Oh, we're going to be president. Let's just start now. We need these back channels." And that's just slang for communications that can't be monitored.
Oh, and here's this: Manafort told. I mean, this is evidence of a goddamn crime. And somehow, well, we know how, Barr, Hal. Barr to prosecution. I've been calling him that since long before this shit came out. Manafort told Gates it was stupid to plead and that he would get a better deal down the road. Manafort said he'd been in touch with Dowd and repeated they should sit tight and we'll be taken care of.
Mm.
But Manafort never.
God.
But
wait,
Manafort, Manafort never said we'll be pardoned. He said we'll be taken care of. In other words, continuing to use the language of the mob.
He is Dundada. He wants to be Dundada.
And then there's McGahn. Remember McGahn? Because we want McGahn to come and testify before the Congress.
Oh yeah. Well, poor McGahn.
He got interviewed, of course. And so Mueller's team talked to John Kelly about Trump wanting to fire Mueller.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that some of these notes involve McGahn?
Yeah, shit yes.
Oh, this is going to fucking blow up.
Kelly told investigators about a tense conversation in the Oval Office that he witnessed between Trump and then White House counsel Don McGahn, where Trump asked McGahn to correct the record after the Times article came out, but McGahn maintained that there was nothing to fix. After the meeting, McGahn privately told Kelly that he did have that conversation with Trump, presumably about firing Mueller. And the CNN coverage notes that the memo is heavily redacted.
That's a couple of crimes right there, isn't it?
This is, I have a feeling that this is just going to be, this is just going to be a bag of mice.
That's almost too much to deal with in one morning. So tomorrow morning is going to be on fire. Wow. Man, that's craziness. I'm not surprised, but wow.
And David in South Carolina, Stan, your not too distant neighbor, says, what the fuck, Mueller? Mueller is a Republican.
Well, Mueller is a company man. He had to take his orders from Barr. And Barr said, look, number one, he truncated the investigation. He made it shorter. That's very clear. But that investigation was not over. I don't think.
Well, no, I'm of a different mindset. Mueller made it clear. Okay. Mueller made it clear that he was, you know, when the thing begins by saying, there's this OLC memo and the president's above the law, so I'm not going to reach any conclusions one way or the other. Well, that was infuriating enough when the fucking report came out. Now reading these notes, it becomes what's worse than infuriating?
It shocks the conscience. Discover some new language, right?
So I mean, Mueller's reputation
is not going to be.
I don't know the extent. See, what we need now is Mueller's real testimony. We don't need him to sit there and say, well, you know, I said on page 112. No. Time's up, Bob.
Wait a minute. So what could happen if he gets...
The thing with these notes. What we have to do now is put Mueller under oath and ask him exactly what Barr said, when Barr said it to him, and ask him straight up, didn't Bob Barr put paid to your investigation?
Are there keystrokes making this subpoena actual as we speak? Because it appears to me that there has to be a subpoena for Mueller if any of this stuff is supposed to be legitimate. Because he has to explain
it. Well, it's
that.
His own
are
team's
notes.
Legitimate's not a question. It's his own team's goddamn notes. And it's so funny that today... The House Republicans, you know, Devin Nunes and Jim Shorts Jordan and that bunch, put out their minority report on the impeachment inquiry saying Donald Trump didn't do nothing wrong.
those people, Nunes, and I said Nunes, you know, he's a little imbecile.
Yeah, I know, because I keep rednecking it and saying Nunes.
No, he's a, you know, he wants to be Anglo so bad he can't.
He's a shit weasel. He's a weasel who eats shit instead of chickens.
Those notes, though, those notes are the, you know, you ever see a loom with a shuttle and it has the yarn in it, and that's what really, like, makes the fabric work? Okay. The notes are the yarn in that shuttle that make those strips, those little pieces of yarn, fabric.
And now, because it's, and see, we've said that this was probably coming for a while, and now it's reaching critical mass where it becomes a feedback loop. Now we get the announcement from the Washington Post as well that the DOJ prosecutors, some of them having had their asses handed to them by Judge Jackson today, DOJ prosecutors will not even attempt to block Lev Parnas of the Lev and Igor show. They will not block or try to block Lev Parnas testifying to Congress next week.
Is it the levy that's breaking? Is that what that means?
Yeah, cue up Led Zeppelin.
I'm not trying to be funny, but I'm serious. I mean, if that happens, because come on, Giuliani, you see, he knows everything. Wow.
Now he's limited by the federal court from giving details of his own criminal proceedings, but he can still talk a lot about other ancillary stuff. And Parnas's lawyer earlier today said that Lev has evidence including 5 iPhones, 2 iPads, 2 Samsung devices, and an iMac, and that they're just chock-a-block with information Congress might like to have, and they've been seized by federal investigators.
Uh-oh. Hello, forensics. Damn. Christmas is coming.
Woo. This is some hefty shit.
Damn, man, I didn't know you were going to drop it on my head like that. Wow.
Oh, and let me, before we go, let me just run off real quick here with a well wish. Best wishes going out to President Jimmy Carter.
Oh, you serious? Okay.
He's 95 years old and he's back in the hospital.
Again?
Yeah, he's got a urinary tract infection. No place in the world better to get one of those than in a hospital. And a lot of times when you've got things like catheters, the UTI is not far distant. But, you know, I wish him only the best. I want him to live to 100, as long as he's got his mind. But he is our first president to reach the age of 95.
Really?
Ever. Ever.
Get out of here.
Nope. And at 95, he is, shall we say, fragile. 95 is only 15 years older than Grandpa Joe will be if he wins the presidency and is inaugurated.
No, don't bring that up.
Jeez. No. Yeah, God damn it, Todd. We have to.
Oh.
I mean, really? This weekend? Headache, did you man. See the? Did you see the no malarkey bus?
Who said malarkey? That's so sad, man. We have to do better. It's so fucking
sad. It needs a dot, dot, dot after it. And the neck and the other side needs to say, nor horse feathers, neither.
All right. When was the last time you heard someone say malarkey?
Oh, I've been known to use it from time to time, but I had depression-era parents. And the thing is, and I want to be fair here, there are people who said, you know, that's the goddamnest boomer thing I ever read. No, it's not.
No,
the earliest usage of malarkey appears to be in an American paper in 1924. And Joe, let's be clear, is not a boomer. Joe, boomers are younger than Joe.
The minute he said phonograph, I was like, man, you just don't ever use that.
Well, I picked up the phone and immediately, I picked up the phone in real time. And called the betting parlor and said, "Put a please give me $5 on Victrola." I bet he still uses the word parlor without having to use the word massage in front of it.
Damn, man. Oh, he'll be dating Queen Victoria pretty soon. Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. It's too much, man.
But I want to go back to my thesis for a moment here.
Oh, all right, Professor.
And that is that it is incumbent upon people who would like to consider themselves to be self-governing to take into account that we are being asked to elect a president that the two, you know, the nominal front runner is a guy who's only 15 years younger when he becomes president than the oldest person ever to be president.
Man, that's a death knell. That meme right there. That meme is short. That's a death knell.
And so, and so, if Joe Biden and, you know, Bernie's only nominally younger, but if Joe Biden becomes president and Joe Biden serves two terms.
No!
By the time Joe Biden is done being president, he will only be 7 years short of Jimmy Carter's age. Now, I don't know. Maybe those diehard Biden fans that I can't find will tell me that that's ageism.
The only time Joe Biden will serve two presidents is after he loses his election and he has to get a job like as a waiter, and there's some type of function, and they have, you know, past presidents like Bush or Obama, and he has to get him some, you know, some kind of dessert. Then he's serving two presidents, and that's the only way that's going to happen.
I wouldn't be so sure. But and I'm not trying to be ageist, but goddamn, you know, we don't live to be a bajillion years old.
He's not vibrant anymore. I'm sorry, he doesn't have it. He was vibrant. He was going through something with his son. Look, I don't know if it's me. I mean, I'm going to bounce this off you. To me, Bernie is more vibrant now than he was the first time around. He has come back. I don't know if he changed his diet. He has more energy.
Well, dig this, okay? If, God forbid, Donald Trump wins a second term, he will leave office younger than Joe Biden will be starting his first term.
You're making a case. I know you're not.
I will vote for Joe Biden with no qualms if he's the Democratic nominee. Let us be clear.
Damn right. Yes, please.
But damn, America. Damn.
Don't forget, don't mess up this IQ test. It doesn't matter.
And the question becomes, what choices remain to us? because the millionaires who tell us how to think every morning are telling us that we can't possibly elect Elizabeth Warren, and she's 70. And I don't understand this move toward gerontocracy.
Let me say this. It's a shame that we're in this place because of the white lash and a lot of other things where in the South, and you have to win the South if you want to win the presidency.
Oh, wait a minute. I got a cowbell for Steve from Georgia, Stan.
Okay.
Give me a 2 pence of horse buggy lantern stocks, please.
You go, man. Go. Oh,
yeah,
that was really funny.
And for my buggy lanterns, please, give me. I would like 10 shares of whale oil stock.
Oh God! Hey man, don't play whale oil short. That was a big deal. Whale oil was a big deal, man.
Yeah, no shit.
People lubricated their wheels with whale oil, and whales. It was a big whaling. Oh my God!
And since it is Moran Monday, and since I mentioned Elizabeth Warren 70, yesterday on Fareed Zakaria's program, remember Fareed Zakaria was the CNN millionaire who was all set and ready to go and do the interview with Volodymyr Zelensky in furtherance of the goals of the conspiracy entered into by the White House as a result of Trump's attempted bribery. Just saying. It's a mouthful, but it's true. Fareed Zakaria on his program yesterday aired a side-by-side photo of, wait for it, get the fucking hockey puck out, get a big bite. They aired a photograph of Elizabeth Warren side by side with a photograph of Karl Marx.
Oh, my God. Come on,
man. Jesus Christ. There's snow on the ground outside. It is going to hurt me to run outside and run rabbits and eat dirt. And the rabbits have better sense than to be out now.
Oh, Jesus. We're up against some shit.
And later on in the program...
That pisses me off. That's fucked up.
Yeah, this is the audio. This is hilarious in a sick sort of way.
They say they're not Democrats because of to the left of the Democrats. Or they not say they're not Republicans because they're libertarians.
It's not a perfect process. But it's a process that I think is the envy of the world in some respects. We actually have a lot of votes, a lot of primaries, a lot of caucuses. And I think a lot of people around the world would like to have a system where they actually get to vote and vote many different times. So I don't think it's a perfect system. All of us could invent a better system. But for right now, I think it's as good a system as I think we can possibly get.
All right. Let me ask you, as a billionaire, what do you think of Elizabeth Warren's desire to tax the hell out of you?
Well, I don't make the laws. Whatever the laws are, I'm going to comply with. So I pay whatever taxes I'm supposed to pay, and I pay a lot of taxes, and I'm happy to do so as an American who came from very modest circumstances. My parents didn't graduate from high school or college, and I got lucky in business world, so I'm happy to pay the taxes that the law requires.
This is a gajillionaire, by the way, named David Rubenstein.
Requires me to pay. If the Ways and Means Committee, which initiates legislation, and the Finance Committee goes along with it, and they pass a bill, I'll comply with it. I don't know that there's a lot of support for what she's doing right now, but if the law is the law, I'll comply with it, of course.
Well, time out, billionaire Rubenstein, you. There is a lot of support for it. As we talked about on Friday on the front porch, lo and behold, 59% of Republicans surveyed said, yeah, Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as Donald Trump is about to run the federal budget deficit up almost all the way to $1 trillion. Let's finish up with billionaire Rubenstein.
All right. On that note of fealty to our nation's laws, thank you all for a very, very interesting conversation. Next on GPS, many on Wall Street would have you believe that Elizabeth Warren is cut from the same cloth as Karl Marx. She's not, of course, but in a moment I will introduce you to a politician whose platform would pull his nation towards something that can fairly be described as socialism. It's not Bernie Sanders. Stay with us and find out.
They say they're not.
Jesus. And they actually put up a picture of Elizabeth Warren next to.
See, man, oh. That's a whole show right there. That's a whole show because, you know, he knows what he is a person of intellect. And a lot of people don't listen, but they see that picture. And I hadn't seen it, but he's describing it. Her juxtaposed against Karl Marx.
Yeah.
That's wrong. That's fucked up. Oh, God. Man, you're just chock full of information tonight. This is just unbelievable. Wow.
Well, you know, this is what happens after a crazy-ass weekend.
Well, look, I'm going to throw something in the bucket after I get off the phone and to help with this challenge. I didn't even know there was a challenge on, but anyway. So
yeah, first program of the month is always Bruce's Memorial Challenge. And we're at $95 right now, if anybody's interested. And we've got a little less than an hour to finish it off.
Well, you're doing a great job as always, and I hope everything on the other end is okay, or better than okay. And
yeah, just remember the program moves back an hour next week.
Say what?
Yeah, the start time of the program moves back 1 hour next week.
The whole week?
Well, for the foreseeable future.
Oh.
We're moving from 6 to 9 to 5 to 8 Eastern.
Okay. And there's the alarm to remind us.
All right. Todd, you take it easy.
I'll see you later, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Later.
Okay.
Bye. And Tracy, are you there?
So from one Negro to another. Wow.
Stop that.
Is it Black History Month already?
It will be in 2 months.
In 2 months.
Let's get an early start.
How are you, hon?
I'm cold and a little tired, but okay. It's been one of those busy on the road all day days.
Yeah, my definition of cold and your definition of cold are two totally different things.
You got cold this weekend. I'm down with that.
Yes, Lord. I don't typically sleep with the heater, even when it gets as cold, just because I don't like to sleep with the heater because it makes me uncomfortable. I'd rather it be slightly chilly, and then in the morning I get up, then we'll turn on the heater. But it has been, it's been dipping down in the 40s. And I dare say sometimes maybe 35 degrees at night. I'm like, oh, no. Jan, we are foregoing Christmas, everybody getting a individual Christmas gift. We're getting a treadmill. And I do not like running outside. Inside. I much prefer to run outside. But it has been so damn cold that I'm like, yep, nope. I'm not feeling this. I don't want any excuse to keep me from working out, I talked about it on Friday, how the turkey trot on Thanksgiving Day, it was 30-something degrees out there. Plus, it was cold. It not only was it cold, but it was raining. And at some points, windy, because there was a few wind tunnels that, because of the buildings in downtown, there was a couple of wind tunnels that we went through. I'm like, this is some bullshit. So, yeah, like this morning, it was 30. It's been like in the 40s in the morning when I get up and go to the gym. I'm like, yeah, taint nice. So, yeah. So Now,
yeah, but here's the good news. Here's the good news. You're going to put up with that for about, you know, what, a week?
No, I mean, because no, it's supposed to start raining again. So we might have another wet, cold and wet winter. I mean, still nothing in comparison to what people are dealing with back east and in the Midwest, you know, and even up in, you know, Northern California.
In many ways, what's going on here is just winter. It feels right. It feels like it's starting a little early, but in the long run, it's probably not. It's just cyclical with a side of climate change.
Right. See, this is definitely climate change here because it does not get this cold in L.A.
Well, see, but it can be so weird around here because I remember with particular accuracy December the 31st, 2011, because that was the day that
you can remember that far back.
Well, that was the day that Agnes and Ferg got rear-ended in the rusty red pickup truck by the local pillhead. And it was probably 60 plus degrees that day.
And that's in December.
Yeah.
In West Virginia.
And within three short years, we would have a winter where it stayed below zero. The overnight lows stayed below zero for like 3 weeks running, which is weird even for here.
See, you know.
And you just can't get warm in that shit.
You can't. I've never been anywhere where it's been below zero. And I will make it the business of the rest of my life to never be anywhere where it's below zero, that part. But you knew. I don't, I live in California, and particularly Los Angeles, California.
For a reason.
For a reason.
Should experience it just once because it's different.
Why?
Why? Well, I don't know. Why do you experience 110 degrees?
Well, because that's how it is here. That's what you have to deal with in the summer. I mean, I think this past summer we got up to at one point.
Well, don't worry. I'm not wishing below zero temps on Southern California. Don't get me wrong.
Please, God, no.
But didn't you go up to some snowy ass resort in the mountains a couple of years ago? Don't I remember that?
Mammoth. Yeah, but it don't get below zero because below zero. I mean, because how cold is it to be for it to snow?
Yeah,
it needs to be below zero, right?
No snow. Snow. It needs to be below freezing.
And what is freezing?
32 Fahrenheit. And when I say below zero, I mean below zero Fahrenheit, which is, 32, which is 33 degrees colder than freezing in the Fahrenheit scale. That's one of the things that always things that always bugs me about the Celsius scale is that it always struck me as being kind of wimpy because shit. Freezing is zero. Hell, I know people that go out in short pants in 32 degrees.
Well, like I said, once you start moving, it's fine, especially when I run. But the problem is I need to get the proper hand gear. And I'm not talking like, mittens and stuff. Because they're too cumbersome. I need gloves that are, warm but thin so I can still move my fingers, for my keys and changing the music, and being functional. But
some industrial strength isotoners.
What you just said, I think, okay.
Yeah, fleece-lined isotoners.
Yeah, something like that. So, because even with as cold as it was when I was doing the turkey trot, my only problem was the fact, two things. I did not have, water-resistant jacket, and my hands were cold. And even without the water-resistant jacket, because I wear a rash guard when I swim now, which has making a difference because it was swimming, you know, with the repetitive movement of my arms and the strokes, it's not so much a rash, but I mean, cause it's a rash, but it's not painful. It's just, you know, my skin rubbing together and stuff. So I've been swimming with a rash guard and they're great. I wore the rash guard underneath my running shirt, my tech shirt, doing the turkey trot, and that made a difference. I need to get a lightweight running jacket that is water resistant, and you know, and I just have this horrible feeling I'm going to probably go to REI, and I really don't want to, but
what's wrong with REI?
Expensive, that's all.
Oh, okay. Well, let me help in one regard. Yeah, because this is expensive too. But I don't know if I don't know if you saw it. Let's see here. There it is. You know what Patagonia is?
Yes.
Okay.
I've heard you talk about. I know they make really good outdoor gear for people who are, you know, moving, and not just because you need a coat, but you need a coat and you're working out and whatnot and so forth.
Well, Patagonia supports Coal River Mountain Watch.
Okay.
And
so, are you an affiliate with?
Well, we're not an affiliate, but we're part of their network of Coal River Mountain Watch is part of their network of groups that receives their support for grassroots environmental justice and environmental justice work. And so,
okay,
you might think about Patagonia. Of course, REI sells Patagonia, but you can always go direct to the Patagonia website. Barring that, I've had a couple of them, and they're really, really good, and they're not terribly expensive. The Columbia waterproof jackets. Water does not get through them, and they're not lined with any, they're not insulated in any way. All their only job is to stop water.
And see, that's what I need. Where it does get cold, I don't think it gets cold enough as long as I'm wearing something long sleeve, warrant something fleece-lined. It doesn't get that cold here. I mean, fucking 30, 40 degrees is fucking cold. I'm not even, I don't know why I'm lying to myself. But as long as I wear long running tights and my socks, I'm good. And typically when I do my runs, the longest I'm out now is actually about 45 minutes. So by the time it gets, you know, like, oh my God, teeth chattering, freezing, I'm home. You know, and in this weather, I would probably only run about 30 minutes outside anyway. But once we get the treadmill up and running, you know, I probably won't be running outside for much longer anyway. I have to say that, it is, you know, my thing is, you know, keeping comfortable is hard. I mean, I am instinctively lazy. It is in my DNA, and it's easy for me to come up with an excuse not to do something. So I need to make sure that, you know, I have no excuses as to not to work out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because that's the way. Now, I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I was listening, like I said, been listening sporadically. I actually went to go swimming, and I was so tired that I pulled into the parking lot, and I fell asleep. Not because you and Todd weren't interesting, but I was just fucking tired. Very interesting conversation, by the way. Hey, Todd. But was I listening? What were you talking about your assurance and about it being a democratic process and you're going to go by what the members of the Horn family says about as far as the fundraising and whatnot and so forth as to what you're going to do?
Well, yeah, I mean,
about insurance,
you know, fundraise all month long versus bump the fundraising goal by $100 a night and still have a week of fundraising free radio.
And what's the general consensus so far?
So far at 10, I'm hearing more just give up the fundraising free week and fundraise all week long or all month long.
I agree because I'm at the point with you as far as your insurance and getting you insured. I'm at that by any means necessary mess right now because, like you said, you have a...
Well, either way, the goal is to get insurance. The question is, how do we raise the funds?
How?
I gotta admit, I'm being a little bit selfish, Tracy, because I cherish that one week a month where I don't have to say anything about it, but thank you.
And as a listener, I cherish it as well. How for never. This is just my take on it because as wonderful as it is to have that 1 week free, it has been patently difficult for you to raise the amount of money you need on a regular basis just for the 200, what is it, 250 a day when you're on air?
No, 200. 250. 200.
And so if you do and raise it up to $300 a night,
that's just going to make the holes get deeper.
Yes.
Right.
And you know, neither one of us are good at math at all. You know, we have to use, you know, I have brief flashes. I still don't know how I got an A in algebra or statistics. I don't know how. That was a fucking fluke, but somehow I did it. So every so often, my math, you know, part of my brain kicks in and I can figure it out stuff. You know, however, when it comes to, you know, fundraising, unfortunately, I don't want to make you even more crazy than you already are as far as raising your money. And I don't want you to put undue pressure on yourself to try to raise. I mean, I would love it. I would be so happy if you could raise $300 a night. I think it would be amazing.
Yeah.
But especially just we're coming into, you know, the holidays and money, people are putting their money elsewhere, unfortunately. And then, you know, we got people, you know, giving to various and sundry political, you know, candidates and whatnot and so forth. So money's going that away. And then, you know, come next year, we're going to be rounding in the corner at the tax season. That part. And so I have problems, as long as
the subscribers are okay with that, and that's not taking anything away from the a la carte contributors, but it's the subscribers
that would
who,
be me.
Yeah, it's the subscribers who provide that 1 week of fundraising free radio through what they do. As long as they're okay with me fundraising all month long and don't go, hey, what happened to the fundraising free radio? We're golden. So maybe
right.
That's just what we and, do.
I mean, because I don't foresee anybody that loves and cares about this program as much as anybody does, because I'm especially your subscribers. I don't feel that they would have a problem with it. Hell, they might even decide to, you know, bump up their subscriptions. Who knows? Only reason why I'm not a subscriber is because I never know, you know, how my money's going to be.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, that's, I completely understand that.
But, you know, like I've always said, when I got, you got. So when I'm having a particularly good month or a good week or what have you, I contribute. And so, and I've been blessed to do that in the last, you know, the last few months. But, you know, everybody's not able. And so, and like you said, this program is for, you know, those who aren't able to contribute, to be denied the privilege of being able to hear your show because they, you know, unlike some other people that I won't mention, Stephanie Miller, if you aren't a subscriber or a contributor or whatever, I mean, I could be wrong, but, you know, you can only hear certain, you know, you can't go back in the archives, you know, for certain people, and it, you can only, you might be able to listen to
that's why I wanted to make clear the goal here has never been to sell the program. The goal here has never been to sell anything. Because
not any gold,
because it's kind of
or vacuum cleaners that suck up
right.
Bowling balls.
The motivating force behind this program is not capitalism. You know, the idea.
No.
You know, I find the idea of, say, Rush Limbaugh and his $55 million a year and his goddamn jet and his wife in a pit, utterly repulsive. The only reason to have that kind of money would be to give the vast majority of it away.
Away. Because who really needs to make $55 million a year? What are you going to do?
Brother Deacon Asa is bringing something to the conversation here, Tracy, that is really important. He said a minute ago, one contributor per 100 listeners. Let's remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we had a greater participation rate, and God Almighty, thanks to everybody who does, because this program wouldn't have lasted more than 15 years without you. But if we had a greater participation rate than 1 in 100, this conversation wouldn't even be taking place. I'd be saying, "Well, okay, I'm just going to get
it."
I would have had health insurance years ago.
Right, and so you know, and as a you know, only been with I guess 8 years that I've been listening. I can't remember how long it's been, but it's been a minute that I've been listening to your show, and it's like whenever I contribute, I think about the times that I wouldn't be able to, I wasn't able to contribute, but I was still able to hear the show live, and I can go back as far as the archives go if I want, because you have set it up to be so. Because what you do is important. It is vital. It is vital to my sanity. I mean, there's been times like when you guys hadn't heard from me. I think this is probably the longest that I've not gone without disappearing in a long time.
You disappeared for like a year or more.
Yes, I did.
A couple of times.
Because I was struggling. A couple of times. But even if you hadn't heard from me, you know, physically, I was there. I was listening. When I could remember, when I could get myself in a space where I can remember to turn on the radio or to my phone and listen to you. But, you know, on those occasions, I knew you were there regardless of, you know, whether or not I had a subscription, because I could listen to you. And, you know, I share this with Lady B, because we've gone through the same struggles as far as our mental health is concerned. And once we figured out, or was that, you know, have been diagnosed, and in my case, I have, my diagnosis has been since, my son Alex graduated from high school in 2006, so 13 years. But within those 13 years, I didn't always have care, because the clinics that I was going to, because even though I have insurance, a lot of places don't take Medicare or Medi-Cal. And it wasn't until there was, I forget which, what it was in California. I even think it has to do with Schwarzenegger, which frightens me, but something, a bill that he passed that helped people get access to health, mental health care. And then with the Affordable Care Act, mental health became a very strong, a very big thing to make sure that people had, you know, was able to get, I mean, because yes, your physical being is, you know, you got to take care of that. But if you, if you're a fucking wackadoodle, and yes, that's a medical term, wackadoodle, it's not going to do any good if you, if your body's
dead. Yeah, that's definitely not malarkey.
Yeah. And you know what? You remember that? I remember the first time I heard my uncle, I mean, Grandpa Joe say malarkey when he, I don't know, when he was debating Eddie Munster.
That's why it's on the, that's why it's on the bus. It's a throwback to that.
Well, I'm just amazed that I remember it, but a lot of people probably don't. And it's like, that's because, you know, because he, it took, because Uncle Joe, because at that point he was still Uncle Joe. And Uncle Joe being who he was, you know, however many years ago that was, when he said that's a bunch of malarkey, it took, it was that way, it was his way of being Uncle Joe and not say that's a bunch of bullshit, what you're saying, boy. You know. But he couldn't say bullshit. He had to come up with, because you could see, we're not, because I remember watching that debate, and you could see the look on his face, and like, this is some bull, motherfucker, you are so full of shit. But he couldn't say that. So he had to fix himself and write himself to say, it's some malarkey. You know, but we all know what he wanted to say. But, you know, back to you and your and your insurance and all this, and I want you to stick around for as long as possible. And unfortunately, you live in a bullshit state. I know you love your state and all that.
No, but I mean, facts is facts.
You know, that, see, like if you were in California, now, as a matter of fact, when I get home, because I got to make sure Alex is doing what he's supposed to do, getting his Cover California. Because not only have they, you know, do we have Cover California, but they have made it so that people who weren't able to be covered before, they are now being able to be covered, and they are now even giving more financial help to other people. Because in California, they we like, we need people. We it's cheaper to keep people well and with preventative medicine so they can go to the doctor when they need to.
That's the damn
or
truth.
When they, you know. And so it's so much cheaper to do it that way than to overburden, you know, people go, you know, their first line of defense about getting sick is going to a fucking emergency room. I guess the idea behind it is let's have the emergency rooms just for emergency room, emergency, actual emergent situations, and not because you got the flu. Well, in some cases, that could be an emergency situation depending on.
Oh, speaking of emergency situations, health. Jesus Christ, Samoa.
Oh, no. Wait, what's happened in Samoa?
They're being burned up by measles.
No.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, they got it's gotten so bad that they have shut down their schools to try to slow the transmission of the disease, and they're even shutting down government offices for 2 days this week.
Now, I have a feeling
that's
that
American,
it wasn't because of the Samoan.
American Samoa.
So how did they get the measles? Was it some anti-vaxxer went there on vacation?
Well, we know this. The vaccination rate on American Samoa for Samoan children is around 31%.
Not good.
You got to have 95% for herd immunity.
Well, there that well, that's hard. So why aren't these kids getting vaccinated? Is it because of a belief?
Well, the anti-vaxxers can't claim clean hands in this. And I, you know, I saw an anti-vaxxer post on Twitter earlier this evening. And it just something dawned on me. And that's this. When an anti-vaxxer, and let me see if I can find it. Where'd it go? When an anti-vaxxer, oh hell, let me just look into.
Was it in your Twitter feed?
There it is. It's an anti-vax. This woman who's an anti-vaxxer, and she, you know, small time account. But how this shit found its way into my feed, I'll never know. Anti-vaxxer mom, dear media, please retire the use of the term anti-vaxxer. It is derogatory, inflammatory, and marginalizes both women and their experiences. It is dismissively simplistic, highly offensive, and largely false. We politely request that you refer to us as vaccine risk aware.
You know, because you know you're the words, you know, you're the, you know, the lover of words, and you know, wordsmith, and I don't care what you say, you are a wordsmith. How for never. Now, anti-vaxxer. So when you say a person is an anti-vaxxer, that means they are against vaccinations, yes?
Yes.
So if you are against vaccinations, therefore you are an anti-vaxxer. So how is that a problem? We are naming you what you are against.
Well, exactly.
You are against vaccination.
Exactly. Not just that. We need to understand, and we need to approach them this way. Anti-vaxxers, you know, if you're an adult and you choose not to be vaccinated, you know, whatever.
That's all you, boo.
Yeah. But when you refuse to vaccinate little children.
Your children.
That how in the fuck is that not child abuse?
Child endangerment.
I'm sorry, child neglect.
Neglect. Endangerment, neglect. I say abuse. Because you know, what can happen to a child who is not vaccinated? On top of what you're doing to other people's children, not just your children, but other people's as well. I am just very happy that my Alex is the age that he is, and that, you know, there probably were anti-vaxxers back, you know, 20 some odd years ago when he was, you know, still in school or what have you. When it was, you know, when he was at the age of vaccination. But, it doesn't like it is now.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. But lo and behold, I think I read a story over the weekend where Pete Buttigieg. No, please, what? Maybe it wasn't Pete Buttigieg. But I read where some Democratic politician is opposed to eliminating non-medical excuses for non-vaccination. You know, like my preacher told me my baby would go to hell if we got a vaccine. I hope it's not Pete Buttigieg, but then again. Well, he put his racial cluelessness up in big blinking neon lights this weekend too. So,
oh, what did he do? See, again, this weekend was, I was.
He said, didn't realize that segregation was still such a problem in South Bend. I thought the court case took care of that. By the way, did I mention that Pete Buttigieg did not go to public school? He went to a private religious school, which were founded all over the country as resistance to Brown versus Board of Education.
Yeah, all those schools, popped up with the little white kids. Parents didn't want them to go to school.
And they were called, academies. Academies. David, here on the mainland, David in South Carolina stand lets us know there are 5 new cases of mumps confirmed at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. The total now stands at 56. And South Carolina flu deaths have gone up to 3 so far this season. And, you know, you'd think that mumps business would scare the bejesus out of people in places like Charleston, you know, in South Carolina, because down in South Carolina, they love them some fetuses. And, you know, the mumps can make a boy unable to help make any precious little fetuses.
Let me tell you, I don't know about, did I ever tell you the story about my father told my mother, I don't have to worry about it, I had the mumps.
I had it 3 times.
Yeah, you didn't have the mumps, motherfucker.
I had the mumps 3 times. Once, because I'm a genetic anomaly. Once on one side, once on the other side, and then once on both sides.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Yeah, oh, no, I had them.
My dad told my mother, well, you don't have to worry about getting pregnant because I had the mumps. I'm sterile.
Yeah, no.
Why? I mean, well, I'm thinking, how is this motherfucker came up with that, and he was only 17 when my mom got pregnant. I'm like, damn, he was talking major bullshit at 17. I'm like, I can't even imagine how much game he was throwing when he was older, if he was coming up with that shit at 17.
Oh, and by the way, it was Mayor Pete. Brother Deacon Asa is serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department.
Ad hoc research department.
Headline, Pete Buttigieg backtracks on vaccine exception claims. Brother Deacon Asa noting Pete Buttigieg was an anti-vaxxer until he wasn't.
Until he wasn't. Again. God say, you know how many people ass beaten were spared because, at least like I said, when Alex was a kid, there was none of this. Like I said, I'm pretty sure there was plenty of anti-vaxxers back, 20-some-odd years ago, but nothing to the level that it is now. And I guarantee you, if my child got sick because some idiot decided not to vaccinate their child and I found the source, I'd be in jail. I'm like, you're going to put my child at risk because if you decide not to vaccinate, you're going to do what I feel is a cardinal sin about not getting your child vaccinated. And if you choose to, neglectful and all this other shit about not getting your child vaccinated, then fine. Homeschool their asses. Never leave the fucking house. Do not go to any...
Do not go to Disneyland.
Do not go to Disneyland. Do not go to the park. Do not go to the movies. Keep you and your germy-ass child at home because, see, nowadays, you don't even have to leave the house. You can fucking have every motherfucking
Just let those Amazon drones fly on by. Fly on over. Hey, Tracy, I'm gonna try to work in one more call here. But I've enjoyed the conversation immensely. And I wanted to tell you, you got a recommendation in from Darlene. As far as staying warm is concerned, Darlene recommends the Patagonia down sweater hoodie. It's pricey as hell.
Gross.
But it's well worth it. It's 800 fill down, humanely sourced down. The birds aren't, the geese aren't tortured in getting the down. And she said, you won't sweat in it. It'll maintain your body temperature. I've never experienced anything like it, but women's sizes run on the small side. She said, I went with a man's extra large and I love it. Now the thing is,
I'm still at that size that I cannot really, you know, buy women's.
Well, padding, and you know what? After you lose the next, if you lose 60 more pounds, you probably still won't, because Patagonia runs small in the women's sizes. I've ordered stuff for Agnes on special, and it get here, and it's too little. So what you do is you move over into the men's sizes.
Yeah, I see.
And eventually,
I always get men's clothes pretty much anyway.
Yeah, eventually. We'll get to the point where, with some exceptions, you know, clothes are just clothes. And men's versus women's,
right.
Like I said, except for some of the ways that women's clothing is cut versus men, you know, hip size, bust, things like that. The only thing is, the down stuff is water resistant, but it is not waterproof.
Need waterproof. I just need water resistant.
Well, I mean, it won't protect you in a downpour.
Well, see, this ain't really in a downpour. I have ran in the rain, but, you know, not like pouring down rain. I'm not going to do that. But if I get caught in a rainstorm, but typically, no, I don't run in the rain unless I'm just happen to be out running and it starts to rain. And I'm never that far from home.
Well, in Patagonia is down. You cannot get cold.
That's what I mean. And not sweaty.
Before I forget,
and I know you got to go.
Yeah.
But when is when are you going to institute? Have you talked about this changing your start time? And
yeah, that starts next Monday. That starts next Monday, and we go from 3 to 6 Pacific to 2 to 5 Pacific, and 5 to 8 Eastern.
Actually, that worked out better for me.
Well, great. I mean, maybe it'll be a way for a way for more people to get acquainted with the program. You know, on a live basis.
On a live basis. So I know you got to go. Quick thing: what's happening with fundraising? But, you know, I'm just going to, you know, have to ask. As far as tonight, is there a challenge that was out or something?
Well, yeah, the first program of the month is always Shirley's, Bruce's Memorial Challenge. And we got it all knocked out, but $95.
Okay, so I'm going to challenge to make that is, like you said, $95?
Yeah.
So somebody needs, you know, whatever I have to say to make the challenge, you do it. And I don't know that I'll double whatever somebody, you know, that part.
Okay. So let's see, at $95, basically if somebody kicks in $30 and you double it, we're done.
Okay. That part.
So if there's $30 out there, Tracy will double it and add to it again. So you're basically four timing your
Thank
money.
You.
Basically you're making you're quadrupling your money that last $30 to come in. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. We'll call it
not a problem. We'll
call it Tracy's fuck this freezing LA weather challenge.
Yes. That bullshit.
Yeah.
That bullshit.
Tracy, you have a good night, dear.
You too, my love. Talk to you soon.
Later. Bye. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver, not appreciating the 38-degree weather in L.A. at the moment. And over to the stress line. You've been waiting a while. Hey, thanks for waiting and hanging in.
Hey, Bobby. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia. I'd just like to say once again, happy belated Thanksgiving Day.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly, and to you as well. We did our Thanksgiving on Saturday with my $5 bargain Kroger fresh turkey. I can happily report it was delicious. I did the biscuits for the dressing on the grill on the acorn. I did the cornbread on the acorn. I did the turkey on the acorn, and then after I made the dressing, I baked the dressing on the acorn. It was all done outside.
Right. Well, the reason why I listen to your radio talk show, and I call you almost all the time, is because I like the rest of the mainstream radio talk show hosts. You're not phony. You don't pretend to be cool and hip when you're not.
I am terminally unhip.
Yeah, exactly. But you're not pretending to be anything or anyone else but yourself, Bob. I mean, don't you just hate it when other radio talk shows have to pretend to be somebody that they're not? And knowing that people will see right through that.
Well, I don't necessarily know what people see right through, Reggie. I just know that I can talk about my world and how I understand the information presented to me. If other people see it as more entertainment than information. I see it.
Right.
I see it. The whole reason we created the horn the way we did is to create a community of like-minded people who could carry on a conversation just like friends do across the back fence.
Right. And without call screeners or being yelled at or being called stupid, idiotic, moronic, dumb, crazy, or insane, you know, or even angry or mad by other radio talk shows, or get hung up on them when they don't like what the truth is presented to them as. Or what they perceive as the truth, or other different opinions from other people. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
I do.
You know, they don't like that. They don't like that. But, you know, they don't know that reality works differently from their little isolated bubble. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yeah.
They live in their own world.
I appreciate that, Reggie. That's very kind of you. Very kind indeed.
And you're much more relatable to them, to us, than they are. You know, even TV talk shows, you know.
Well, I mean, and look, I'm not trying to make less of anybody, but it just seems to me that let's put it this way. If you're a millionaire and you get up in the morning and you turn on what I refer to as my filthy morning habit.
What, Morning Joe?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, that's the show for you because that's a bunch of millionaires and you're a millionaire, so you're in your community.
Right.
I resent, however, millionaires telling people who struggle paycheck to fucking paycheck what they ought to think or how they ought to live. Because that seems, Reggie, to take a hell of a lot of nerve.
Yeah, it does.
For a millionaire like Donnie Deutsch to declare that if Bernie Sanders is the nominee, he won't vote for the Democrat, even though he knows how evil Donald Trump is.
Right.
Is the height of arrogance.
Right.
And for people to sit around a table and declare that we can't have Medicare for all when they have never, ever, once in their lives worried about how they would have health care. Well, that's just hypocritical horse shit.
Oh, you mean the people around the panel that are on television?
Yeah, all of them.
You mean like on CNN, MSNBC?
All of them. Let's put it this way, Reggie. If you have never worried about how you were going to be able to go to the doctor when you're sick, if you've never done that, then just shut the fuck up about Medicare for all.
So that goes for Morning Joe, Mika, and the rest of them, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't get on the air on these network programs without being paid, you know, if you're the host, you know, north of $1 million a year.
Right.
And I guess they think they think they're worth it.
Right, I guess so. But you know, they spend their money on it.
But if that's the case, Reggie, then Nicole Sandler's worth it. And Rick Smith is worth it.
Yes, she is.
And John Britovo is worth it.
Yeah.
All these people who bring all of this brilliance to the forefront are worth that same $1 million, but there's a difference. Some of us don't want $1 million because some of us recognize that that's obscene.
Why you say that, Bob? Exactly.
Because there's an old bumper sticker slogan out there that says, "Live simply so others can simply live."
Right. And besides,
the things that matter to working class America are the classic Maslowian hierarchy of needs. Food, shelter, someone to love them back, viable community. And you can look it up online. Look up Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There's no $1 million. Right. There's no $1 million in that hierarchy of needs. Working class America needs a roof over their head, enough food to eat, the ability to go to the doctor when they're sick, a living wage, and a means of transportation to get to and from whatever job they like to do. You know, one of the underappreciated, under-discussed issues in this country today is the number of Americans who get up every morning and go do something they hate just to stay alive.
Right. Sound like Al Bundy from Married with Children. He hates his job, but he has to go and do it because he has no choice. That reminds me of Al Bundy right there, Bob. He hates doing his job. He hates being a shoe salesman, but it's the only way he can make a living. Well, at least he goes out there and do it.
My dad had a high school. My dad had a high school education, and he got to be up to where he was a foreman on a furnace, and he loved his job. And he's the one who told me when I was a kid. He said, "Whatever it is you choose to do, if you can find something to do where you get up every day and say, 'Goody, I get to go to work today,'" he said, then your life will be a success.
Right. But you think that these multimillionaires, like on television, say that, or they don't? You think they'll say that?
They know they're in the tall cotton. Some of them are more responsible and more ethical than others.
Yes, they are.
I don't begrudge Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes or any of those folks, whatever they're paid. God knows the corporation can afford it.
Right. Or even Joanne Reed.
And I don't begrudge professional athletes whatever they can get.
Right.
Because the owners are some miserable, shitty, greedy sons of bitches. And they need whatever the athletes who actually do the work and make the money can get, good for them.
But the fundamental
philosophical problem, Reggie, is that you've got millionaires, and you know when you've got a LeBron James who goes out and builds a damn school, that's doing the right thing with your money. On the other hand, if you get on TV every morning and you tell people who are scrambling, you tell people who have to make choices between food and a set of snow tires in the winter that we can't have Medicare for all, you know, pardon me, Reggie, but fuck you, buddy. Not you, them.
Yeah. Right. like them, Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski, his wife, and the rest of them on CNN.
And you know, we're not gonna make them the whipping boy and whipping girl. The bunch over on Fox are a billion times worse.
Why you say that, Bob?
Well, because they're engaged in actively lying to people.
Right.
They're not just saying they're not just being clueless millionaires. They're being open, actively dishonest millionaires. I mean, look at that fucker Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Guy's been running around saying, I root for Russia over Ukraine.
Right.
You evil little prick.
Right.
But anyway, right. We've run past time, Reggie. I got to get out of here, but I'm glad you called. And we'll talk again,
Bob.
Soon, all right?
All right, Bob.
All right, later. Bye now.
Have a good night, Bob.
You too.
And stay warm.
Gonna try. Later.
Right, me too. Later.
Lucky for me, Agnes seems always to be cold, but at the same time, I swear she's 10 degrees warmer than I am any given moment in time. And yet, if you stick a thermometer in both of our mouths, we both come up 98.6. But she radiates warmth. I think it's part of the magic of her being a Viking warrior pharaoh princess or something. I don't know. So thank you very kindly to Kyle. Hey, Kyle, thanks a bunch. Kyle knocked down $5. So again, Tracy's got a challenge. If somebody will come up with $30, Tracy will kick in the other 60, and we will be finished with Bruce's Memorial Challenge to begin the month of December here at the Horn. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who contribute, whether as subscribers or a la carte. Thank you to everybody who did get us as far as we got on Bruce's Challenge so far. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.